This is Bob Brundage, and today we're having a nice conversation with Al Stevens, who is in Germany, and I'm still in Albuquerque. The date today is June the 25th, 2003, and we're talking by telephone to Al. And Al, we'll like to start with the way we usually do. Tell me a little bit about life before square dancing, where you're born and brought up and so forth.
Was there?
I hear you.
I was born in Waltham, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up in Derry, New Hampshire.
Okay.
Where I went through school, through high school, attended the New Hampshire College of Accounting and Commerce in Manchester. And then shortly after my 16th birthday, I had just received my driver's license. I had a younger brother who was signed up to take square dance lessons at the Grange Hall in Sandown, New Hampshire.
Okay.
And I, of course, being a young whippersnapper, fresh out of high school and in college, and had a driver's license. My father broke the news to me that he couldn't take my younger brother to the square dance lessons and wanted to know if I would, and I did. And in the parking lot, I saw a lady walking up the steps, the Grange Hall steps. And I thought I recognized her as a schoolmate of mine, and I called her name. She stopped, came down the steps, and came towards the car. And the closer she got to the car, the more I realized she wasn't the schoolmate I thought she was.
I see.
And I sat there with egg in my face and apologized. And she said, "Oh, are you here to take square dance lessons, too?" And I said, "No, I'm here to drop my brother off." And she said, "Well, tonight is our last open house. You don't need to know anything about the activity. Why don't you come in and dance with me?" And my father was an uneducated man, but he had told me when I was young that he'd whip my butt if he ever found out I turned down a dance with a pretty woman or a free beer.
All right.
And that was the start of my involvement in the activity.
Okay. Well,
and then that was back in March of 1958.
There you go. Okay. And then you went on to school or into the service or what?
Yeah, I graduated from high school. I was in college when the Vietnam War broke out.
Uh-huh.
Of course, back in those days, we had a draft. And I found out through my next-door neighbor who worked on the draft board in New Hampshire that my name was coming up close to the top of the draft. So I decided to, instead of being forced to join the Army, I decided to start looking at recruiting stations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I went and visited the Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Army recruiters, and thought that the U.S. Air Force had the best to offer.
Okay.
Joined the Air Force and spent 20 years and a couple of months working for Uncle Sam.
Okay. So, and you wound up in Germany.
Eventually, yeah.
Eventually. And,
and my Air Force career started in, I was enlisted in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Then went from there to San Antonio, Texas, Lackland Air Force Base for
uh-huh.
basic training. Then I was sent from Lackland to Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi to Travis Air Force Base in California, from there to Tripoli, North Africa.
There you go.
from Tripoli, North Africa, I was sent to Duluth, Minnesota, Duluth to Cameron Bay, Vietnam. Cameron to Hawaii for 5 gorgeous years. Hickam Field in Hawaii to Langley Air Force Base in Virginia for 5 beautiful years. Then I ended up in Ramstein Air Base in Germany for 5 years before I ultimately retired.
Okay.
And all this time I kept my finger in the pot calling.
Right. Okay. Well, following your square dance classes way back in New Hampshire, you continued dancing there, and how did you get into calling?
That's funny. The club that I belonged to was a teenage club.
I see.
It was called the Sundown Shufflers, and our club caller was a man by the name of Eddie DeVoe. And one day he had a barbecue at his house. It was in April. And it was a beautiful spring day, I recall. It was on the weekend. And in April, he had us over to his place for a barbecue. And he had been doing, back in those days, Bob, as you probably recall, lessons weren't as long as they are today.
Right.
We went through open houses, and then we learned how to dance, and I think the entire duration of time was less than 10, 12 weeks.
Right.
And, well, we were graduate dancers. We had this barbecue, and he had been doing a singing call throughout the lessons called We're Drifting Further and Further Apart. It was on
right.
the Bogan label.
Right.
Many, many years ago. And I asked him, I said, Mr. DeVoe, would you call Drifting Further Apart? I just love the song, the way the tune was put together. He said, Al, I am so tired of calling that. If you want to hear it, you call it.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And I did.
I'll be darned.
That was the start of something interesting.
Very good.
From there, I decided I would like to get involved, more involved in calling. I kind of liked what I heard at the end of doing the singing call, the sound of two hands coming together in rhythmic applause was overwhelming. And coming from a musical background anyway, I had dabbled with playing guitar and singing in a rockabilly band in high school and enjoyed music, and I saw a flyer advertising a caller's school done by Mr. Jim Mayo, and I applied in writing for the caller's school, and on the questionnaire was a few statements that I had to answer. One of them was, how long have you been dancing? And when I put in months, what I should have been put in years, Jim came back with a very diplomatic letter and explained that his prerequisite is that you should be at least dancing 3 years before you get involved in calling.
I see.
And he thanked me for my interest, but did not allow me in his caller school.
Okay.
So I taught myself.
All right. Okay. And then did you eventually wind up at a caller school or no?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
would
had,
you,
had a knack for music, and singing was no problem for me. Singing calls became no problem.
Right.
Once I found the trick to once I found out that the modules that are contained in a singing call can be interchanged, all you had to do was you know, plug and pray like we do today with Microsoft.
Right.
But once I found that, it was very easy for me to adapt, and I learned from talking to people who came through about patter. I recall talking to Marshall Flippo one time. He came through New England, and I asked him what the success was, well, you know, what the key behind the success calling patter was. And he said, how many, in the three-hour dance, he said, how many tips do you usually call? And I figured, well, close to eight. And he said, okay, if you call eight tips. He said, you have eight singing calls, eight patter records, right? And I said, right. He said, do you know the singing call figures that are contained in each singing call that you have? And I said, yes. He said, good. He said, what I'd recommend is that you take the figure from singing call number eight and use that in your patter number one, tip number one.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, instead of swing, corner, and promenade, just Alaman left and come back and promenade. And insert a circle break periodically to avoid being you know, boring the dancers. I thought that over, and I said, man, that's cool. That, you know, that's easy. And then the figure for singing call number seven, put in pattern number two.
Uh-huh.
And I said, man, that's easy. And I said, isn't there going to be a period in the evening where you're going to come together?
Where the twain shall meet.
He said, sure is. But he said, hey, he said, where do most clubs, when do most clubs have their refreshment break? I said, aha. He said, there's your answer.
Okay. Leave it to Marshall, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. Did you recall any other mentors along the way?
Boy, did I. Too numerous to mention. My first open dance that I soloed in was the fourth Saturday of April, 1958. And shortly after that, like I mentioned, I had to join the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself out in California, and California had a training program that was, in my estimation, excellent. It was a mentor system that they had. And I was graceful enough to be mentored by Bill Kastner, late Bill Kastner.
Yeah.
And I learned an awful lot from him. Of course, I had also been a very staunch fan of a lot of people in the New England area.
Yes.
Names that I can recall. Jim Mayo, of course, is an icon that still
yes.
exists. Your brother, Al,
yeah.
Was an icon of mine. Gloria Rios.
Right.
Was Mal Cameron. Mal Yikes Cameron.
Yes.
Were all influential in my development.
Well, good.
It was... When I was stationed in Hawaii, I had the pleasure of hosting a dance for your brother, Al.
Uh-huh.
He brought a tour group over there.
Oh, yes.
He and I did a dance together. I sponsored my club sponsored a dance for him at Fort DeRussy in Honolulu, and we advertised it as an Al of an evening.
There you go.
Al Brundage, Al Stevens.
Right.
We had a good time, and he personally invited me to a caller's seminar for experienced callers that was held by Deuce Williams in
Troy
Hill,
uh-huh.
New Hampshire. And the first year I couldn't attend because of military commitments. Then I found myself the following year stationed in Virginia, and I got I sent Al a letter and told him I wouldn't be able to make it the first year, but the second year I could attend if he had that school again. And he sent me another invitation. I attended the school And that was the start of my career as I know it today.
Okay.
I learned a lot from that school.
Right. Well, on all your travels, I know you must have bumped into a lot of different situations. You've been stationed so many different places. But I'm primarily interested in your association with Caller Lab. I know you've been very active with Caller Lab, on board of directors and so forth. Tell us a little more about that.
Okay. In Hawaii, Jack Lazary and Ron Schneider brought a tour group over. We worked a dance together. They encouraged me to join Caller Lab. I didn't know what Caller Lab was. They explained it to me. And back in those days, you were invited to become a member
right.
by written invitation. I believe
yes.
each of the members had so many invitations that they could extend.
Right.
And I was extended a written invitation by Jack Lazary. And that was to attend the very first Caller Lab convention in 1975
okay.
In Chicago, I believe. However, again, due to military commitments, I couldn't attend that convention. I subsequently was asked the following year by Jack to attend the convention, and I did. I joined Caller Lab in 1976. Been an active member since. In 1992, I was elected to the Board of Governors of Caller Lab and remain in that position now. Have been active on various committees. I'm an active member of the Mainstream, the Plus Committee. I'm chairman of the Overseas Advisory Committee.
There you go.
And take an active role in the activity, more so than before, especially after I retired. I don't have much time to play golf. The weather's not conducive to good golf playing here in Europe, so
well, you better
do something else.
You better move to Albuquerque. We play here all year round,
yeah.
But be that as it may. Well, when was it you actually retired from the military, Al?
1st of October, 83.
Oh, that long ago.
Coming up on 20 years.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. Well, then somewhere along the line you met your bride.
Yes, I sure did.
And
we met in a square dance class that I conducted here in Germany. Took us a long time to break the ice and get together. I've always had a philosophy that I should not mix personal life with business. And I had kept this philosophy all my career. I had been married in the past. I married somebody who was not a square dancer.
Uh-huh.
And got her involved in square dancing. We ultimately did some recording together on the Windsor label years ago. Then that marriage didn't work out. And, I decided not to, or have always decided not to mix
yes.
business and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
However, when my wife came along and I had her in a class, she had studied in at the University of South Carolina in America for 3 years, and I was just dumbfounded at her the way she mastered the English language.
Yes,
and that coupled with my butchering of the German language just fell right in. You know,
right,
and we began
right.
to date. And ultimately ended up getting married.
Oh, that's great.
And I broke my promise to myself not to get involved.
I hear
I'm
you.
Glad I did.
Right. Well, of course, since then, you've become sort of the head honcho in the European circuit, if you will. I know one of the questions that I've been asking everybody, and this might be a good place to put it in, where do you think square dancing has been, and where do you think it is now, and where do you think it's going?
Bob, I can only answer from my perspective here.
Sure.
In Europe, the activity is extremely alive and well.
Great.
I only hear of problems that have developed in other parts of the world, and I don't speculate. I just hear about these things, and I for the life of me just don't understand. I want to back up just a tad.
Sure.
And mention that when I first arrived in Frankfurt, Germany, I was sent here by the United States Air Force. And when I got off the airplane in Frankfurt, I was met at the airport by an Army major, an Army warrant officer, chief warrant officer, and an Army E-9. And their respective positions were the Army major was the president of the European Callers and Teachers Association.
I see.
The warrant officer was the training director for ECTA. And the E-9 was the secretary of ECTA.
Uh-huh.
And they were there to roll out the red carpet for me, not because of my calling attributes, but because I was the first member of Caller Lab to hit the European theater.
I see.
And at that particular point in time, Caller Lab was revered.
Yes.
Caller Lab was an organization that established and set the policies for where the activity was going. They made recommendations that I encouraged the European Callers and Teachers Association to pick up, and we adhered to the recommendations that Caller Lab made.
Right.
We made very good use of the entry level. We made sure that our callers did not call off the program. We made sure that what Caller Lab recommended we took as gospel, because of the reputation Caller Lab had.
Sure.
And in my estimation, we have proven that what Caller Lab recommended really does work. The activity has grown in the short time I've been here. I spent 10 years on the board of the European Callers Association, the last 5 years of which I was president. And since my tenure on the board of the European Association, and today, the activity has more than quadrupled.
Right.
We have four times as many callers in the activity today than we had back then.
Mm-hmm.
We have five times as many clubs involved in dancing today than we did then. So the entire activity has taken on a completely... you know, we're still growing.
Right.
And well, I still maintain that the wisdom that Caller Lab bestowed upon us really does work.
Well, I imagine
unfortunately, we can't force every caller in the world to join Caller Lab.
Yeah.
And to abide by Caller Lab's philosophy.
Right.
And that's, to me, where the biggest problem lies today. In America, there's another organization that has cropped up that is providing a lot of competition for the organization. And it's unfortunate that the people don't don't adhere to Qualo Lab's recommendations.
Right. Well, part of it that I sort of assume, and you can verify or dispute, one of the rules that you've been able to keep intact is the fact that people should stay in one program for an extended period of time before they go on to another.
That was exactly what Qualo Lab recommended. They recommended that people dance in one program for a specific point, period of time before they advance to another program.
Right.
And each caller here in Europe abides by this.
Right.
We looked at the mainstream program as our entry level.
Yes.
And I still don't know of many callers. I don't know of any callers who would take their people out of graduation and put them into a plus class. Today,
right.
Even.
Yes. Well, that's obviously part of a good part of the success, which has been mistakenly done here in the United States.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm losing my voice, I guess. We may be coming down near the end of the tape. This may be a good time for me to just briefly stop for a second, long enough to turn the tape over. So
okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
So, in your estimation, around the world, where do you think square dancing might be going? Of course, from your perspective, it might be considerably different than anybody else's.
Yeah, this is what I say. It's hard to portray where the activity is going when the activity is still thriving. You know, we're not involved with the aches and pains that other areas of the world are encountering. So we're still going up.
Right.
But I can't speculate as to where the activity is going elsewhere in the world because, you know, we're still enjoying a very good growth. I've got a graduation exercise to perform tonight.
Yes.
And we've got 28 people that were graduating in my class.
Great, great.
Last year's class yielded 46.
There you go. Well, do you feel confident that, at least in Europe, that you can do or keep from making the same problems that we had here in the U.S.? You know, a lot of people, the rush to plus type of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we've heard about this rush to plus. We don't know what it is.
Right. Well, that's great.
So we're going to continue to place our hat on or hang our hat on the peg that says, hey, what we're doing is obviously working.
Yeah.
Is there any foundation in what we're doing?
Right. Right.
You know, and as long as we can keep the masses in believing that, then we'll continue.
Right. Well, Al, a little earlier you mentioned you recorded on Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
Any other recordings you've been doing?
Oh, yes. I just did a release on CBRC. It was my 71st individual release.
There you go.
I've recorded with... I was on the Windsor label for 3 or 4 years. I went from Windsor to Dance Ranch, Norm Murbach's old label. Then I went from there to a German label called CW.
Oh, yes.
That was in existence for a couple of years. And then I went from when they closed their doors, there was a new recording company in Sweden called Sting that had opened their doors. I recorded for them for a while.
Good.
Then I went with McGregor for a while, and I'm now with CBRC out of Australia.
Great. Had you gotten involved in round dancing at all?
As a dancer.
Okay.
Only not as a cure.
Right. How about contras?
I have used contras in my class. I use a contra, an easy contra, on those evenings when the full moon comes out. We have the full moon effect.
Okay.
And I usually don't. I'll break up the monotony of the ever constant learning process with showing an easy contra. And I have two or three that I do on a regular basis, but I would not by any means call myself a contra prompter.
Okay. Well, that's really great. Well, along the line, Al, do you have any regrets? Anything you wish you'd done differently in the square dance world?
Yes, I would. If I had it to do over again, I think I would have stood up to my boss in Hawaii and mentioned that I really would like to go to the first Kala Lab convention.
Uh-huh.
And get on board in Kala Lab earlier. If I had to roll back the hands of time, I think I would like to get involved in dancing earlier.
Yes.
I got involved in 1958, but once I found out how much fun it really was, I really scorned myself for not getting involved earlier.
Right.
It's just such a wholesome activity and such a wonderful activity that that I do regret not starting earlier.
Right. Well, you had a unique experience in the fact that you were active in square dancing in so many different places around the world. You know, most of us were born, brought up in one place and stuck there, and their whole experience was in one geographic area. So, yours has been a very unique experience. Well,
yeah, it sure has. I have the pleasure of calling a dance in every state in the union.
There you go.
I got my 50th state, oddly enough, on my 30th anniversary.
There you go.
I was stationed here, Germany, living here. And I was calling a festival dance in Stockholm, Sweden, and there was a visitor from a club in Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me if I would be interested in calling the Spring Fling in Fairbanks. And I mentioned, yes, I would be. And she, oddly enough, that year they had Ron Everhart, who was a recording artist with a Mountain label, I believe. And he was the featured caller for that convention, and they asked him if he knew me. And, of course, he was there in Frankfurt to roll out the red carpet for me.
Right.
And he said, oh, of course I know him. And they asked if I was a caller for the, you know, for them. And he said, sure.
Right.
So the contract was signed and everything, and I was elated at the fact that the weekend that they chose was the fourth weekend of April, 1988.
There.
Exactly 30 years after I had soloed.
That's really great.
Called to my 50th state. And along with that, I've added 27 foreign countries to my credits.
There you go. Well, that's really great. Just in passing, Have you been a mentor for other people that have come along into the activity?
Quite a few. Mentor in many, many different ways. Caller Labs accredited Caller Coach program.
Yes.
I became the first caller outside of the North American continent. I believe Gloria Rios Roth was the first Canadian to become accredited.
Right.
And then after she became accredited, I pursued accreditation, became accredited. Then Martin Mallard from Canada became accredited.
Right.
But I was the first outside of North America to be accredited by Caller Lab.
Okay.
And since then, I had set my sight on retirement from calling when I got at least two other accredited caller coaches accredited in Europe to make sure that the professional standards that we abide by would continue after I retired. It didn't take long before Kenny Reese and Lawrence Cooley in Germany became accredited.
Okay.
And they attended my caller coach schools.
Yes.
And now I have caller I have accredited caller coaches that have gone through my training program from Sweden, from Great Britain, and recently at the San Antonio Convention, Jeanette Stäuble from Switzerland passed her written oral examination and became accredited. So I've changed my retirement date three or four times.
I can imagine. you and quite a few others, as a matter of fact. I can remember a fellow who was not deeply into the activity that swore he was going to retire at least 30 years ago, and the last I knew he was still calling. So, but well, I just happened to think, did you ever bump into Cal Golden over there?
Oh, yes. I brought Cal over to do my caller schools. I did not bump into him when he was active duty. He had retired before I came over.
I see. Okay.
But his name was synonymous with square dance excellence in Europe, and I knew that. And when I became accredited, the first thing I wanted to do was, of course, honor those that preceded me and who helped me quite a bit. Your brother was the first one that I worked with over here. Mm-hmm. He encouraged me to pursue accreditation. Bill Peters was the second.
Mm-hmm.
Then Cal was the third that I brought over. And since 1983, I have been importing an accredited caller coach from America to come over and do my schools with me each year. I run three schools a year.
I see.
Usually in October. I have a beginner school, intermediate school, and an experience school.
I see.
And it's the only one that has another accredited caller coach imported every year.
Yes. Well, so at the moment then, you're not, don't have any specific plans for retirement?
No, not in the near future. I want to try to get in place an accredited caller coach in each country where square dancing is alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I lack Denmark and the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
Has nobody
okay.
emerging as yet, but I'm still working.
And
I won't give up.
You're still having too much fun.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, I can hear the golf course calling me.
Lucky you. I just got a fax from my wife, said your line is busy.
There you go. Well, So I think we've covered just about everything, Al. And I remember the last time I saw you was we were enjoying a cocktail in Germany with your old friend Dave Taylor.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. You were at the hotel when I swung by.
Yes.
Yeah, I met you at the World Convention, I believe.
Yes, it was the World Convention in Karlsruhe. Yes.
It was an honor.
Well, I thank you again, Al, and if you think of anything else that you'd like to add to this tape before we call it a day?
Not really. I will look forward to meeting you in person again. I know you've attended Call Alive conventions.
Yeah.
Our paths have crossed a few times there.
Right.
Hopefully, be the good Lord willing and the creeks don't rise, I'll be able to attend the Reno convention. I had to give up the San Antonio
convention. Yes, I hear you did.
Because
right.
of the Gulf War.
As a matter of fact, I was planning to have a lady caller named Chris Jensen.
Right.
Interview you at the last Call Alive convention, and then you were unable to make it. But
I applied for and received a waiver.
Yes.
Requirement, the attendance requirement because
right.
of the war.
But this.
We're going to look forward to attending in Reno.
Well, good.
So if you're there, we'll look forward to seeing you again in person and getting together.
You're right. Well, thank you very much.
And a privilege, and I'll look forward to our next meeting, Bob.
Okay, Al. Thank you very much for your time and effort. And
thank you. Hit them hard, but not too long, not too often. Okay?
Not too often is the problem, right? Okay, so we'll call this the end of the tape.
All right.
Thank you very much again.
You take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Bob. Bye-bye.